EM Guidewire, hard-hitting emergency medicine from Carolinas Medical Center.
Welcome back, loyal fans and new friends to EM Guidewire. In this episode, we will hear from two stalwart members of our EM Guidewire family, Drs. Durba and Folk. These two started our Intern Nugget series when they were just starting residency, and now the time left in their training can be counted down in days. Time is an amazing force. It can make days seem to take an eternity and years blink by in an instant. It can also help teach us and give us new perspective. So, let us take this last opportunity to hear what Drs. Durba and Folk have to teach us and learn from their perspective.
This is Destiny Folk, PGY3.
And this is Sophia Durba, PGY3.
This episode of EM Guidewire is brought to you by Urine Cups, incredibly useful and versatile for anything from holding your earrings or dentures to sharing some ice cream or snacks with the rest of the ED team.
But not forgetting your patient to leave that urine sample that's been holding up their dispo and a room for the last 4 hours. Urine Cups.
In this episode, we're going to talk about our highs and lows of residency and discuss some of our favorite rapid-fire teaching points that we've learned this year.
We'll start with reflections from early on in intern year and then run through some clinical tips we've picked up along the way, and end with more recent reflections of the last year of residency.
What an adventure the last 3 years has been. In hindsight, this has been three of the most rewarding years of my life, but also the hardest. When I spent some time reflecting on the highs and lows of residency, when I knew we were going to record one last Durba Folk podcast before graduating, there were definitely some moments that stood out. For me, the low of intern year was having two intense off-service months, OB and trauma, back-to-back. I had these rotations during the winter holiday season, and it was really hard being at the hospital for multiple 80-hour work weeks and not being present for family holiday traditions. I was able to make it through those tough times thanks to my supportive husband and the abundance of co-residents and lifelong friends I have made during residency, like you, Dr. Durba.
Aw, that goes for you too, Dr. Folk. I don't know what I would have done without the amazing friends that I've made along the way, like you, and my incredibly supportive and patient husband. Thinking back to intern year, a low point for me was my ICU month as an intern during the Omicron wave of COVID, when I was about 7 weeks pregnant, exhausted, and trying not to puke with all of the fun smells of the ICU. But the hardest things were signing a death certificate every few days, having the same end-of-life conversation with family members who unfortunately focused in on the 0.2 improvement in creatinine today and not the multi-system organ failure despite four pressors and maximal vent settings. I felt like I grew resentment towards some of my patients' family members, and it was hard not to project my own wishes for what I would want or not want if I was a patient in that situation. I leaned on my peers, friends, and upper levels, who happened to be Dr. Troutman, one of my future chiefs at the time, and came to terms with the fact that it's okay to have emotional reactions, whether positive or negative, to your patients. Managing those emotions is obviously important, and it's also okay to not love your job every day.
Those ICU rotations intern year were certainly challenging in so many ways and made us grow in more ways than we realized at the time.
Now, this wouldn't be an EM Guidewire episode without high-yield clinical tips. So, Dr. Folk and I thought back to some of our favorite clinical pearls that we've encountered over the last 3 years. I'll start with the first one, and this is regarding hip dislocation reductions. Don't get up on the exam table. You look ridiculous. You're going to maybe throw your back out. And you might even fall off and pull the patient off with you.
That sounds like it's coming from personal experience, Dr. Durba.
Thankfully, not the falling off part, but I did actually throw my back out on the very first hip dislocation I did on my ortho rotation as an intern. I got the hip back in, but I can't say it was worth it. So my tip is, you can use whatever technique you like, but stand next to the patient, have someone else push down on their hips with counter traction if you have another set of hands. And a trick I've been taught from our ortho team for posterior dislocations is that sometimes when traction alone isn't working, hyperflexing the hip can help clear the femoral head of the lip of the acetabulum to allow the hip to go back into place.
That's a great teaching point, Dr. Durba. One of my favorite teaching points that one of my lovely mentors, Dr. Brown, taught me is that you can actually give nebulized naloxone. This is really helpful in trauma patients or in patients with uncontrolled pain caused by cancer. The great thing about nebulized naloxone is that it is a self-titrating medication because when the patient awakens, they can simply pull off the mask themselves. This ensures that they aren't hypoxic or apneic, but you don't fully reverse the opiates in their system. This can be helpful if you unintentionally snow a trauma patient that has an open fracture and is screaming in pain. By using nebulized naloxone, they can simply take the mask off when they wake up, but you will still have their pain controlled.
Nice. Self-titratable Narcan. I like it, Dr. Folk. My next tip is for using LET, lidocaine, epinephrine, and tetracaine topical gel. My tip is to apply it twice, especially for peds patients, but also for those jumpy adult patients who won't let you anywhere near them with a needle. I don't think I've ever had it work well enough with just one application and not need additional injectable lidocaine. So I apply it twice, and my second tip is to apply it yourself and not put gauze over it, but rather put on a Tegaderm or just leave it open if they'll sit still. The gauze soaks it all up and barely leaves enough on the wound to have any effect.
That's another great teaching point, Dr. Derba. On a completely different topic, we don't see a lot of unstable vaginal bleeding in non-pregnant patients, so I just want to mention a few tips when you're managing these patients in the emergency department. Obviously, you're going to get access, give blood, and consider TXA, call OBGYN, and then you're going to need to pack the vagina while waiting for OBGYN. You can do that with Curlex soaked in either gel or TXA if you can get TXA to the bedside quickly, obstetrical forceps, and you can also try to visualize the source of bleeding with the speculum, but this may be difficult depending on how much blood loss the patient is having.
Yikes, that sounds intense. Thank you for those tips, Dr. Folk. And on the note of controlling bleeding, my next tip is the upside-down pyramid.
Ah, yes, the fabled upside-down pyramid. What are you talking about, Dr. Derba?
So one of our excellent nurses taught me this one when we had a patient come in from dialysis with a bleed from his fistula that wouldn't stop with direct pressure. You take a square of quick clot and you fold it as tiny as possible or even just ball it up. Then fold a gauze square twice to make a tiny square and put it on top of that. Then fold a gauze square once so that it's a rectangle, add it to your pile. Add another gauze square folded once on top but 90 degrees to the first so it makes a cross. And then a few unfolded gauze squares on top of that. So now you have an upside down pyramid of quick clot and then gauze, and that works by directing the most pressure onto your tiny piece at the bottom rather than having a stack of gauze that just disperses pressure evenly. Put it on the spot that's bleeding and wrap tightly with Coban. I've been able to avoid having to put a stitch into a fistula quite a few times with this trick, stopped bleeding A-line sites in the ICU, and used it other times when you don't quite need a stitch to stop bleeding, but just gauze and Coban isn't doing the trick.
Nice. I'll be sure to be constructing more upside-down pyramids and making my team wonder why I've determined that it's arts and crafts time.
Hey, you know what? It works.
Thanks for the tip, Dr. Derba. Another one of my favorite teaching points is from Dr. Gibbs, the chair of our emergency department. He has hammered into my brain that when I have a patient who was found down for an unknown amount of time, that I need to think about three diagnoses: compartment syndrome, rhabdomyolysis, and necrotizing fasciitis. And when I'm suspicious for either compartment syndrome or neck fash, I need to consult ortho right away and not wait for any additional imaging, as time is of the essence to get these patients emergently to the OR.
Those are classic board questions, but also absolute can't miss high morbidity diagnoses. And I'm glad you mentioned considering it in a patient who's been down for a while, because it can be easy to be fooled into missing this in a seemingly intoxicated, just needs to MTF type of patient.
Exactly. Compartment syndrome especially never seems to present exactly like you think it would from the textbooks.
My next teaching point is a key skill every ED doc needs to have, but also remember to use in the moment, and that's a good jaw thrust. When you hear they're having a seizure and it takes a minute to pull benzos and your patient is literally blue and satting in the 70s, do a jaw thrust, suction as best as you can if you have it so they don't aspirate. And while you're setting up your nebulized Narcan for the previously mentioned trauma patient who's now suddenly desatting and not breathing so great after you gave them just a touch too much fentanyl, do a good jaw thrust. The stimulation itself sometimes is enough to wake them up and get them to take a good deep breath on their own. And lastly, in your otherwise encephalopathic and suddenly desatting patient, do a good jaw thrust while someone grabs you a BVM and OPA or NPA.
We can get so reliant on our equipment, and it's easy to forget that something as simple as a jaw thrust can help so much in those seconds when your equipment is out of reach. We have to have at least one PEDS teaching point. In kiddos who have fluid refractory shock, the pediatric studies that we do have comparing the peripheral vasopressors, dopamine versus epinephrine, show that epinephrine was more effective in resolving refractory shock, epi resolved shock more rapidly than dopamine, and survival rates were higher in cohorts receiving epi. Therefore, epi is commonly used as a first-line vasopressor for septic shock in kiddos, which is definitely a difference than managing septic shock in adults. I'm always going to pull norepinephrine for refractory shock in adult patients.
Excellent tip, Dr. Folk. Kids are scary, no matter what Dr. Fox says. Hopefully, you all find some of these tips helpful on your next ED shift. Now, we reflected on some challenging times early on in residency. We want to spend the last part of this episode reflecting about some challenges from the last year and what we've learned from them, and then end with some high points and what we're looking forward to. One of the hardest times in residency for both me and Dr. Folk came during the end of our second year.
Our second year of residency is definitely the hardest. We are tasked with running the department as second years, seeing the majority of the high acuity patients, and we also have 4 ICU months as a PGY2. Although we are very well trained by the end of our second year, we're quite exhausted.
Dr. Folk and I had been dedicated to becoming chief residents together since quite literally the first time we met each other.
Each of us had this goal for different reasons, but my reason for wanting to become a chief resident was so that I could prepare myself to find an academic job immediately following residency. I wanted to get involved with the residency interview process, improve my public speaking skills, as well as become a mentor and resource for the residents at our program. Finding an academic job coming from a 3-year residency program without a fellowship is difficult, but I felt being a chief resident would help me stand out. I had become involved in national leadership roles, invested time in the EM Guidewire podcast, and had also become heavily involved in various roles with medical students rotating at Carolina's Medical Center. When I received news that I was not chosen as a chief resident, I was devastated, and to be honest, quite shocked. I was happy and proud of all the residents in my class who were selected as chief residents, but definitely went through a lot of grief over the fact that I wasn't selected as a chief resident along with Dr. Durba.
I was never the most clinically strong resident, nor did I have the best test scores, but I loved to teach junior learners, I wanted to get involved with interview season, and similarly to Dr. Folk's goal, I wanted to stand out when applying for jobs. The week we found out, although I was proud of myself for getting the role of chief resident, I was devastated that Dr. Folk wasn't also a chief with me. I realized that week and throughout the last year that sometimes you focus more on reaching a goal because it's something you feel like you're supposed to do rather than considering the reasons why that goal really matters to you. And that doesn't apply just to being chief, but maybe to the residency or fellowship you just matched into, or the job that you just signed for. I had actually already gotten a job offer and signed the following week, so being chief didn't matter for my job search. I realized that what I really wanted was to keep making educational content, hold extra educational sessions for the interns, and organize resident wellness days with Dr. Folk, as we had done together throughout our first 2 years. And I realized that I didn't necessarily need to be a chief to accomplish any of those goals. Reviewing cases for M&M changed the way I think clinically and made me a better clinician. I loved getting to know our incredible applicants and being a part of the interview season, and I absolutely love my co-chiefs and could not have done this last year without them. But most importantly, this year taught me that I need to really think about if I'm getting involved in something because it's important to me, makes me feel more fulfilled rather than more burned out, and if I'm really doing it for me or if I'm just being my type A self and getting involved because it's something that I feel like I'm supposed to be doing.
After almost a year out from the decision, I've done some reflection as well, and I have some tips for those of you out there who may be in a similar situation, as chief residents were recently chosen all around the country. Tip number 1, I feared I would not be able to find an academic job after residency since I was not selected as a chief resident, but I actually found my dream academic job at a top 10 EM program in the country. So please don't think that being or not being a chief resident will determine your ability to get an academic job. Tip number 2, if one of your close friends is picked to be a chief resident, don't let it ruin your friendship. It will be hard and awkward at times, especially at the beginning. But if you communicate well with them regarding your feelings, you won't lose your friendship. I'd say that my friendship with Dr. Durba is even stronger after the past year because of all of this. Tip number 3, if you aren't selected as a chief resident, this now means that you have so much time to dedicate to your academic interests and to your personal life. This year, I was first author on a paper that was recently published in AEM Education and Training on Intern Mental Health and was the chair-elect of the Emmer Education Committee. I was able to lead Intern Orientation Month last July and got to develop really close relationships with the interns that have persisted throughout the year. Importantly, I've spent much more time with my husband and dog. I am a more well-rested person than I was as a PGY2. I've developed new hobbies like rock climbing with Dr. Durba and cooking that I definitely wouldn't have had time for if I were chief resident.
Nice. I am astounded by all the accomplishments you've made over the last year, Dr. Folk. Now, what if you are a chief? Don't fret. All that doom and gloom stuff I just said isn't all there is to it. I'm ultimately really glad I did it, but I have a few tips for upcoming chief residents to keep their sanity. Communication and boundaries. Chief year was incredibly challenging and ended up being harder than second year of residency for me.
And some of you listeners may remember that Dr. Durba had a baby, made a literal human during her second year, and chief year has still been more challenging.
The constant emails, tasks, and overwhelming workload can feel impossible. It can also put strain on your relationships, like my friendship with Dr. Folk and like your marriage. Having a day off and suddenly having some chief thing come up that takes you away from your partner unexpectedly can make even the most kind, patient, and loving partner be very understandably frustrated. The communication tip that Dr. Folk gave is so important. Check in with people that matter to you early and often. tell them how hard of a time you're having, but also acknowledge that you being absent so much of the time is incredibly hard for them too, and set boundaries. There are multiple chiefs for a reason, so it's okay to say that you'll be radio silent on your anniversary or kid's birthday, and set boundaries with what is and isn't a you problem, because sometimes that seeming emergency on your day off is a disgruntled resident or attending who doesn't consider the 5 hours of your personal time you just took to try to fix their emergency, and who still is equally disgruntled with you after the 5 hours because a perfect solution doesn't exist. Consider if this is truly a problem you have to fix, and if it truly has to happen right now. Because they might be equally upset with you whether you tell them that up front or spend 5 hours of your day off on the issue. I'm grateful to have had this experience, gotten stronger clinically from it, and significantly improved my communication skills and willingness to set boundaries, because I would have rather learned this through an experience that was a 1-year commitment rather than taking a specific career path and ultimately being unhappy.
Excellent tips, Dr. Durba, that we can take as residents in general. Now, we can't forget to talk about the highs of residency, which I've actually already touched on some of them. I am so excited to join the faculty at another highly ranked EM residency program. Obtaining an academic job coming from a 3-year program, especially without a fellowship, is very challenging, and I'm proud of my hard work for finally paying off. I can't wait to teach residents, learn a new hospital system, and continue to grow as a new attending physician. Another one of my highs of residency was going to Italy as a PGY2 and Spain as a PGY3 with my husband. These trips were definitely some of our favorite memories together. We love trying new foods and exploring different cultures together. Lastly, the co-residents I have had by my side during residency have made surviving the last 3 years possible. I'm so grateful for my friendship with Dr. Durba and for having her there by my side on the best and worst days the last 3 years.
That is so true. For any new interns listening, having the same challenging experiences naturally brings people together, and I've made some of my best friends in residency. And it's awesome to look back on the things that you and I have accomplished together, Dr. Folk, these last few years, from mentoring junior residents to leading resident wellness events and starting the first Intern Nuggets segment of EM Guidewire. I have an awesome job close to home practicing in the community in a rural setting with opportunities to teach and work with medical trainees. My husband and I started our family and had our son in my second year. I went on an incredible kiteboarding vacation with my husband as our first trip away from our baby last year, and we spent a week in wetsuits and took kiteboarding lessons in Cape Hatteras. We've taken lots of road trips to the beach to visit family and spent some awesome date nights with Dr. Folk and her husband eating good food, rock climbing, and talking about how excited we are for all that is to come after residency.
It is so rewarding to look back and reflect on how far we've come, all the things we've learned and overcome, and the relationships we've built throughout. My last more so word of wisdom for our listeners is to take care of yourself during this medical journey. Pursuing a career in medicine is really hard. As we've discussed, there will be highs and lows during residency. Just remember, you are not alone during the lows, and thankfully the lows of residency are temporary. Take time with your family. Stay physically active, as that will improve your mental health. Get outside when you can. Have one fun thing to look forward to each week. Some weeks, that may just be getting a full night's sleep if you're on an ICU month. Other weeks, that may be a date night with your partner or a vacation week.
And it's okay to not love every part of your job. As with anything, there will be good days and bad days. Enjoy the crazy ride that is residency. And lastly, a huge thank you to our listeners.
It was actually a medic who inspired us to make this last podcast. He came up to me after bringing a patient to our hospital and said, "Hey doc, it's been a while since I've heard you on the podcast." So thank you to all of those who have followed Dr. Durba and myself through our residency journey on EM Guidewire.
Thank you to our families for supporting us day in and day out.
To our amazing faculty at this program.
And to our co-residents.
We are going to miss CMC greatly, but can't wait to start our next journey as attendings. And a special shout out to you, Dr. Durba. Thank you for being a great friend, physician, and podcaster. I can't wait for all the vacations, rock climbing sessions, and hikes we're going to have with our families in the future together.
Same goes to you, Dr. Folk. I could not have done this without you, and can't wait for our future adventures and fun.
Thanks for tuning in for another episode of EM Guidewire at the J. Lee Garvey Studio at Carolina's Medical Center.
Durba and Folk out.
Peace out.
Thanks for listening to EM Guidewire. Go, be awesome today.
CMC out.
Warning to Dr. Fox, I think we're going on about 3 hours of sleep or less.
Yeah, we're doing great. We're on nights, we're on days, we're on all the shifts.
Driving.
Okay, it's fine. It's going to be fine. Okay, all right, let me take a sip of tea. Okay, just, you know. I also just realized there's a fox on my microphone.
You got the lucky fox.
Yep.
always watching.